You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. And as we delve into this week's topic, a reminder that some of the content may be of a sensitive nature. Now, here's your host, Des Kennedy.
Hi, we're with Momentum again, and this week we're on to a great subject, and it's a subject that, you know, most men, I guess, maybe more so than women, but we'll get into that discussion. But we're talking about apologetics, and the area in particular is creation versus evolution. Now, before we get into that, I want to just remind guys about our website, momentumaustralia.org. Lots of all our previous podcasts are on there. There's room for feedback. You can ask questions. And if you want to financially support this ministry, please feel free to do that on momentumaustralia.org. And guys, don't forget our car line. Don't do life on your own. If you need a safe and confidential conversation, reach out to our car line, 1-800-000. Men. That's 1-800-000-636, and that's available 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. through our friends at Caroline Connections, a ministry in its own right. Mm-hmm. And guys, we also now are on YouTube and TikTok. Search for Momentum for Men. We're posting, you know, almost daily on those platforms, so please reach out to those. Now, back to today. We have with us today a guy called Lee Wilmington. And Lee reached out to us when we did a previous show about the existence of God. And he said, I'd love to come and talk to you guys and give input into, you know, the whole discussion. And so we thank you, Lee. And he's from a place called Fernley Park, which is not far from Canberra, although he's not a Canberrian. He wouldn't like us to say he was a Canberrian. But he would define himself as a Bible-believing scientist. And I love that term.
Yes.
So welcome, Lee.
Thank you very much.
That's really cool. So over the next two shows, and we're going to do two of them, not week to week, but, you know, within a couple of weeks in between, we're going to be discussing with Lee some of the key areas of debate between those who hold a relatively short existence for universe and the earth, and which is a creation worldview, and those who believe in evolution, the suggestion that, you know, the universe and the earth have been here for billions of years, and they examine rocks and say, oh, this rock is 25 billion years old, or whatever that looks like. And so we're going to get into those four issues, because there's lots of men who ask those questions and really don't have answers to them, whether they be Christians or non-Christians. So it really is important for all of us. So you've got the floor. Tell us what brought you into this area of expertise.
So I went through university studying physics. So I have a Bachelor of Applied Science Physics degree. Mm-hmm. That's 40 years ago now. But one of the things that I saw as a teenager was a little cartoon strip, which probably today we call a meme, of a book and a test tube floating in the ocean. And on the book was written Bible, and on the test tube was written science. And standing on the Bible was this priest, and riding in the test tube was this mad scientist. And the mad scientist was pointing a ray gun at the creature, and the preacher was throwing lightning bolts at the scientist. And at the bottom of the cartoon strip was this little caption of both the Bible and science bemoaning the fact that they would get on so much better if they just knew us more.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
And that really caught my attention as saying, well, there is actually a middle ground or a view there where you can see how God has been working through science for all the events that have occurred in the past. And so the whole idea that creation must be wrong or science must be wrong, there is actually a ground in the middle there where you actually can see both of them working together and actually being the one story. So I've been looking for this, and one of the things that I cottoned onto was the teaching of one Dr. Chuck Missler from Cornelia Chuck House. Missler, yeah. I probably butchered that name.
Yeah.
But a lot of what I've learned has come from him and from the research that he's done. But also just from my daily Bible reading, I'm continually looking out for what's happening in the world today and how that is fulfilling many of the prophecies that are in the Bible.
Yes.
That's
true.
That's so cool. How much research do you do? I mean, how much time do you spend every week doing research?
So this is not my particular field of study or work or anything. So I'm not actually actively researching the subject. I'm just compiling pieces over the last 40 years of various bits of information that I've been fed and piecing together in my own mind how it fits together. And it just is a beautiful story when you actually can see how it fits together.
That's really, really cool. So let's get into some of the more technical aspects, if we could put it that way. You know, some discussion about evolution. And there's all talk about creating fossils slowly and those sort of issues.
Yeah.
Talk to those things.
So one of the things that I've pieced together is that there are three fundamental problems with evolution that I can easily explain as to why that theory, and it is a theory of evolution,
of course, right,
there's no proven facts to it, that theory no longer holds water or never did actually hold water. And one of the first ones is, as you say, you just can't create fossils slowly. So what the scientists are looking at is that they're looking at the layers of sediment that are created when the annual floods occur. So you have your rainy seasons, it washes sediment down and it creates these nice little layers of sediment.
Yeah.
That's nice and fine. And you can say, all right, each of those layers is a year of flood. And so they start looking at these layers and trying to determine time by the layers that are in the sediment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you cannot create a fossil of a tree vertical through multiple layers of sediment.
No.
It just doesn't happen. The tree rots out before the fossil can be created.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
You can't create a fossil of a fish eating another fish.
That's correct.
By slow layers of being deposited over hundreds of years.
Yeah.
You can't create a fossil of dinosaur footprints by slowly little layers of sediment going out. The only way you create fossils is in a major flood event.
Catastrophic event.
And Mount St. Helens, when it went up, it was an ice-covered mountain, and when it erupted, it threw all this mud down the mountain slope, took forests and all the rest of it. They came back later, and guess what? They found fossils of trees vertical in layers of sediment.
Right.
It is only during a major flood event that you can create fossils. And so when you start looking at the fossil record that evolution uses and says, look at these fossils at different layers in the profile of the sediment and all the rest of it, if you start looking at that and say, well, what happens in a major flood event? What is the first things that get buried? It's the stuff down in the ocean floor.
Yes.
Which is where evolution starts. And then as the waters rises, you get fishes being trapped in the mud. And then as the water rises up to ground level, you start getting grasses and trees and stuff being fossilized. And as you work up a bit further, anything that can't move quickly is going to be fossilized. The sea, the lane. This is ancient man sort of thing. The fossils of ancient man aren't ancient men. They're the sick men. Anything that had the ability to climb the mountains never got fossilized.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought of that.
Because there was more mud to pour on top of them to make them into a fossil.
Yeah.
So the actual record of fossils that is used by evolution and placed over time because of the layers actually could all occur in Noah's flood, in one major flood event.
Yeah.
Wow.
It can all be explained. All of that can be explained just by the fact that you need a major flood event in order to create fossils. The second problem with evolution is, or the thing about how people complain about creation, is the question of where do you place your clock? So science today loves to use the clock on the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
That's how all time is determined in the scientific world.
Yes.
However, we all know about the theory of relativity by Einstein.
The fact that
the further that a clock moves away from a gravitational body, like the Earth, the slower it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, the faster it goes.
Faster it goes, yeah.
So if you move towards a huge gravitational body, so the thought experiment done by Einstein of two twins, one going to visit a black hole and coming back and his twin dying out on Earth long before he came back because the time slowed down, that whole theory of relativity with time, if you take the entire mass of the universe that we know today and put it in one spot, like the nothing that exploded at the Big Bang, if you put a clock next to that, we are still in day seven. The clock would be running so slowly that we're still in day seven.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So just by moving where your clock is, time changes. So the argument that creation couldn't have happened in 6 days is null and void, depending on where you put your clock.
Of course. I mean, we assume that, you know, the 6 days in creation is an earthly 6 days, is what you're saying. Whereas in God's realm, you know, where he is, it's irrelevant. It's just giving us a perspective. Yeah. Wow.
Yes.
I never thought of that. That's crazy. Yeah. So what was the third?
The third one is rock dating. The basis of science is that if you want to quantify something, you look at the results you get and you create a theory.
Theory.
And every time you find something that doesn't fit that theory, you've got to go and revisit that theory to go and make adjustments to it, to go and create a theory that hopefully eventually becomes a law.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get to a point where you can't find anything that breaks the theory, it becomes a law. The theory of evolution is still a theory because it's broken.
Yeah.
And we'll come to some more about that, but rock dating. It's one of the worst bits of science there is, and apologies to anyone that's out there in that field of study and all the rest of it. But if you look at the five assumptions for dating rocks, assumptions 2, 3, 4, and 5 are sort of reasonable. So if you understand rock dating is done by the decay of elements from one to another, so it's a radioactive decay of elements. So you have what they call a parent material and a child material. So they measure the ratios of parent to child, and that's how they get their dates. So assumption two is that no parent material has leached into the material.
Uh-huh.
Assumption three is that no parent material is leached out.
Yeah.
No, four is no child material is leached in, and five is no child material is leached out. Now, it's not perfect, but it's a reasonable set of assumptions. But assumption one is absolutely unfathomable, unbelievable. And that is that the rock was created only with parent material. And there's absolutely no way that you could create a rock in the randomness of the world with only parent material in it. And the whole theory is broken. Yeah.
So I was going to say, we'll take a short break and then we'll come back and talk about that in a bit more detail. We'll be back shortly.
Thank you.
You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at MomentumAustralia.org.
Momentum Australia is proudly brought to you by station sponsor Bible League. Bible League is a global, not-for-profit organization providing Bibles, biblical resources, and training to the under-resourced church in 70-plus countries worldwide, as well as working right here in Australia, particularly in Aussie prisons.
Bible League is supported by a wide range of churches and individuals. Your support will continue to spread God's word, transform lives, and help introduce people to Jesus.
Partner with Bible League right now by calling 1-800-800-937 or going online to their website, bibleleague.org.au.
You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at MomentumAustralia.org.
Hi, you're back with Momentum, and we're talking with Lee Wilmington, and it's a great conversation, man. You're a very clever boy, and it's really, really cool, and you've done your own research, which is just amazing. And so just before the break, we were talking at the high level about rock dating. Lee, tell us in a lot more detail, if you can, that people will understand what you mean by rock dating. What does that mean?
So the process of rock dating is to try and understand how old things are.
Right.
We do actual dating of living tissue as well by the same process, the radioactive decay of carbon, because in the natural environment with carbon, there is a given percentage of it that is actually radioactive, that actually decays. And with living organisms, the assumptions there are a little better in that while you're alive, you're breathing in and consuming stuff that has carbon in it.
Right.
The food you eat and all the rest of it.
Yes.
So when you're consuming that food, you're consuming carbon that, and a certain percentage of that is radioactive. And so when you die, you stop taking that carbon in.
Yes, makes
so
sense.
So the point of your death, or the point of the living organism dying, it stops taking in the carbon.
Right.
So then as the radioactive carbon starts to break down, mm-hmm. go into its child element, then it's not being replenished.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So measuring that lower level of radioactive carbon gives us an idea about the dates, how long it was since an organism died.
So
with rock dating, we use three different elements that are radioactive. And again, we know the rate of decay. And so the idea is that if the rock had a certain amount in it, and we can measure how much that has decayed, and so therefore get an idea of how old the rock is. But the problem we've had, as we were describing before the break, is that the first assumption that you use for rock dating is that you only have parent material in the rock for all three elements. Absolutely impossible. It can never happen when a rock's created. And so they use that, and where it breaks down, and one of the classic examples of where rock dating, the science of rock dating is broken, is in the layers of the Grand Canyon in America.
Right.
They're in the wrong order.
Oh.
You've actually got the younger layer below the middle layer with the oldest at the bottom. The actual layers in the Grand Canyon are in the wrong order. What makes the science of rock dating even more, I want to say laughable, but not really scientific, is that when you submit a rock for dating, they will not date the rock unless on the form that you submit the rock with, you put in how old you want the rock to be. And then they'll go and look at the three elements and try and find out the one that is closest to the date you want the rock to be.
You're kidding me.
They will not date the rock without you first putting a date on of how old you want the rock to be.
That is just unbelievable. Why does science then, not tell the truth about that? I mean, because they talk about the Grand Canyon all the time and the layers in the Grand Canyon. But, I mean, they're totally misleading people. Isn't that true?
They want an older Earth.
Mm-hmm.
The rock dating gives them the ability to say that the Earth is a lot older than it is. They just want an old Earth for that there. So,
and therefore, no clue.
Yeah, they need you to have the date. They need you to provide a date before they will actually do the analysis on it. And if you go and take a rock, say, from a recent lava flow out of a mountain and go and have it submitted, they say, oh, no, that rock's too young to date.
And it's actually full.
They just won't. They won't date it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah. So the whole need there for it to be an older.
So when you say they won't date it, is that because it's been? I mean, it's lava flow. It's brand new, or is it? Or can you get it? Okay. So you, if a rock's been burned, obviously.
Then we have the thing then of now how. And one of the things that annoys me a little bit with using this rock dating is they're now trying to tell Aboriginal people that they've been around here for 60 million years.
Yeah.
Now, nobody survived the flood, Noah's flood.
Yeah,
we're all descended from Noah.
Yes.
So they haven't been around for that long. They're using the rock dating methods that they've got for the cave paintings and all the rest of the Aboriginal people.
They say
you've been here 60 million years.
They haven't.
No.
No one has, as you said.
Not happened.
It's amazing that the world government, United Nations, whoever, have totally taken over control of the facts and people are believing it. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. So what else in that rock dating do you find disturbing?
Sorry, repeat.
What else do you find in the rock dating area that is disturbing for you? Or is that enough?
Yeah, I think that's enough. Yeah, that is. Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
I mean, it's crazy. Let me ask you a different question. Do you think that it's being done deliberately? So it's not just wrong science and it's not just a mistake. It's actually a deliberate attempt to change the way we think about the world and how it was formed.
With the problems we've got with evolution and the things that we can prove that evolution is correct, we still teach evolution today because it is the only non-God answer science has.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's it is very, the very true. Only thing that they can come up with that doesn't require a higher being, that doesn't require someone that we need to be answerable to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting that, you know, they have all these theories that can be proven to be wrong that they're using to prove that God didn't exist. And I find
they're trying to do that.
I mean, I find that fascinating because, I mean, before I became a Christian in 2011, you know, I absolutely believed in God because for me, it was much more logical to believe in a creator than to believe that all these things happened by accident. And it's purely a logical argument.
And the whole requirement for them to say that if you've given enough time, then the modifications to DNA and all the rest will bring about these new species. There is not enough seconds in the universe, even if there was 1,000 modifications per second.
Yeah.
For there to be enough random activities to create new forms of life.
Yeah.
There's just not enough time. It just can't happen that fast.
Wow. I mean, that's interesting. So actually, I heard an interview with Elon Musk, and somebody asked him if he could build a rocket that could travel at the speed of light, and he sent it off from Earth. Could he reach the end of the universe if time was no limit? And his answer was, it was an amazing answer. His answer was, they can never get to the end of the universe because the universe is expanding greater than the speed of light. And I'm not sure whether that's right or wrong. That's just what I heard.
Yeah. And I can't get my brain around that as to if nothing can travel faster than the speed of light, how can the universe be expanding faster than the speed of light?
Good point.
Sort of thing. That's... It just doesn't comprehend in my brain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe there is something, I don't know. I'm not even going to go there.
He was correct in saying that the universe continues to expand.
Yes.
He was correct in saying that because that's what we know.
Yes, that's true.
Never stopped.
Well, this has been a really interesting... Yeah,
there's fun things happening in the universe in this search for dark matter and stuff like that is because they've observed galaxies that are rotating, but are rotating... They need more mass than what they can see for the way the galaxy is rotating. And here I'm going to throw a real curveball at people and say the actual solution they found for this is that you don't need dark matter if you allow the space that the galaxy is in to also rotate. So you can have, therefore, the space around a galaxy rotating different to the space around another galaxy, to be rotating different to a space around another galaxy. It solves all the mathematical problems and you don't need to search for dark matter anymore.
Because everything's moving.
It raises a question of what happens when these different pieces of space intersect.
Meet, yeah.
When they're spinning at different. So there's a whole thing there that just blows my mind that there are solutions and things out there that are, still a bit weird.
Yeah. This has been a great show, Lee. Thanks so much for your time for this show. We're going to get you back to the second show. And so for folks, guys, don't forget our website, MomentumAustralia.org. Don't forget our Caroline, guys. Don't do life on your own. 1-800-000-MEN. That's 636. Thank you, Jerry. And thank you, Lee. It's really cool.
Welcome.
We'll be back with this next show in a couple of weeks.
You've been listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. For more information or to hear this week's show again, go to MomentumAustralia.org. You can also access a whole range of resources to help you on your journey and to get in touch with the team at MomentumAustralia.org.